that we have had the most inept non-leadership. Just look at New York in history, you know. Again, you and I have to do a show on just the latest events in New York, and we're already talking about 12:12, and we're running out of time. If you guys want to reach Christina and me, you can reach me at expert53@AOL.com, or you can call us at 212-209-2970. That's 212-209-2970. And how will they reach you?
Is FKLB Frank? Well, how do you say that?
Frank Kilo Lima Bravo.
Right, FKLB@AOL.com.
Okay, mira, and don't forget, stay tuned every Tuesday, 7 okay. to 8 p.m.
Okay. Okay.
WBAI 99.5 FM.
You guys are way over time. Okay, it's 3 o'clock in the morning in Warsaw, Poland, 8 o'clock evening in New York City, and that means it's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only live on for the best, expect the worst.
Good evening to one and all. It is 3 in the morning in Poland. However, I'm not in Poland. I'm actually right here in New York. Let me just get back here.
There we go. That's better. Yeah, I just was so used to doing the show on the phone that I just couldn't get away from using the phone. But boy, it's good to be back live here in studio. Thanks to everybody who filled in and kept things going while I was away over there in Europe at the Chaos Communications Congress, visiting with hackers, visiting with people, visiting with all kinds of places in the last 3 weeks or so. It's been an amazing experience. It always is. But getting back is always even more of an eye-opener for some reason. Kind of sad in a way. I'm not sure why that is. When I was over there, everything made sense. Everybody was friendly. Everybody was pretty much knowing what was going on, knowing what they were doing. There was focus, there was direction, and that kind of rubs off. You know, you feel it yourself. You feel like there's actually a purpose. There's actually something that you should be doing. And every time I go over there and come back, I have direction. I have something that I want to do. Started the first time I ever went over there, and continues to this day. Problem is, once you get back here, things get kind of weird. They get weird almost right away. Usually, it starts as soon as I get off the plane in the airport. Usually, it starts when I, you know, on the initial search when I go through. Okay. Thank you, Rebel. But. So what he doesn't realize is that VoiceStream records his phone number every time he calls, even if it's blocked. That's a little thing there. So all the harassing calls that he's made have been logged over the course of the last few months, or years even. And that's one of the reasons why we don't put him on anymore. But regardless, yes, where was I? See, this kind of thing throws you off. Totally throws you off. It's kind of like a microcosm of what I'm talking about here. As soon as you get back in the country, just get thrown off. Okay, so yeah, I did not get searched this time in customs, but instead they pretty much just waved me through, which was a surprise. But as soon as I got onto the subway, well, actually, it was before then. It was trying to figure out a way to get back home. Should be easy, you know. You're in a foreign country, and it's perfectly simple to get places. You want to go to you know, to Oslo from Amsterdam, no problem. You know, any train station, you can just find out that information. You can buy the tickets you need. You know, you can use credit cards. You can do whatever you have to do to get there. They'll tell you exactly where to go. They'll tell you what track the train is on in a different city. They'll tell you what time it arrives. The connections are always made one way or another. And the system works. It really works. So, yeah, I got back to New York. And let me demonstrate what I had to deal with. Let's get rid of that first. All right. There's a phone number that you call to get information about train schedules. It's actually rather convenient. You enter touchtones and it tells you the train schedule. So that's what I decided to... I have to enter a long-distance code for a local call. How about that? Okay, well, fortunately, I have one. Whoops, I guess I don't have one. Okay, well, I see things have changed here at the station. Let's see. We're going to try another code. Hold on. Let's try this one more time. Okay. Great.
Thank you for calling the Long Island Railroad. After the beep, say schedules, fares, or representatives.
Now, you see, that's a little bit different. That's a little bit different than what it was before. Before, you could just enter touch tones, and it was no problem at all. You know, now it's you have to say something, and that's, you know, that's great. Voice recognition technology is just it's amazing. But when you're at a subway station, which is what I was at, waiting for the A train to take me to one of the train stations, either Penn Station or Jamaica, there's a lot of noise. So how do you do that when there's a lot of noise? You know, it's, man, does nothing work in this country? I'm trying to use a CD player, and it doesn't even work. This is insane. Almost every time, and I'm going to go through this laboriously. I'm going to explain every instance of this. Almost every time I use a bit of technology since I've come back, it doesn't work for some reason. It just is completely broken. And right now I'm trying to use a CD player that refuses to recognize CDs. Which I don't know what it's good for if it doesn't do that. Okay, recognize the CD on that track, but not the track I want. Okay, so I'm going to turn off the other CD player, put this over here. This is so embarrassing. And this happens every time. Oh, you look at that. It's my fault. There were two CDs in the same CD player. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's try and do this a little bit more smoothly. Okay, it takes a long time for it to recognize the CD. Because it's a technologically superior machine that takes longer to recognize these things. And sometimes, because it's so technologically superior, it doesn't recognize it at all, so the initial problem is still there, even though there's one CD, so I'm going to move this one over there. You know, this was supposed to go so smoothly. Okay, now we go to the track that I wanted. There we are. Now, this is the sound that I was going to try and demonstrate here. That's right, the sound of a subway. Now imagine trying to call that little voice recognition system with all this going on in the background.
Thank you for calling the Long Island Railroad. After the beep, say schedules, fares, or representatives.
Schedules!
At any time, you can get help by saying the word help. You can ask to hear a message again by saying repeat. You may change an answer by saying change the previous answer. You can start over at the very beginning by saying start over. Or you can end the call by saying goodbye. This is a voice response system. You must say schedule, fares, or representative.
So you see, it doesn't really work all that well when you're surrounded by a lot of noise, and there's nothing you can do about it because it just keeps asking you for the same things over and over again.
This is a voice response system.
So
you must say schedule, fares, or representative.
I'm standing at the subway station, trying to get train information, which is something that I should be able to do without having to make a phone call. I just keep getting the same computer-generated voices over and over and over again. And so I'm standing there on the subway station just shouting obscenities into my own phone and looking like a complete lunatic with, all my bags and everything from Europe and not knowing where I'm supposed to go. Do I go to Jamaica? Do I go to Penn Station? What do I do? Complete mayhem. It's horrible. And then finally, I just called and stayed on the line for about 5 minutes, and then finally a person came on and was able to tell me where to go. So I went to Jamaica Station on the train. Now, when you get on a train here in this country, all of a sudden you notice the difference. You notice the difference between what it was like over there and what it's like over here. The first thing you see is how sad the people look. People just look miserable. I don't know why, but basically, when you're in Holland, which is the last place I was in, no matter where you are, whether it's in the Bijlmer, which is supposedly the worst district, or someplace that's touristy, people just look happy. It's hard to explain. Here, you don't get that. And the place is dirty. It's loud. It's noisy. Inefficient. And I love the subway, too. I'm not trying to put it down. But these are facts. These are definitely facts that are true when you go on to something like this after being on something else. You might not notice it ordinarily. You might not notice it if you don't go away. But when you do go away, they stand out, and they really cause you to think and ask yourself, why is this? Why do the people look so unhappy? Why is everything so dirty? Why is it so loud? And, you know, one thing I really can't understand, and this is something that I find true almost everywhere, when trains start to move, they move smoothly, and they stop smoothly. In New York, though, and in the United States in general, they lurch, and you get thrown all over the place. Just, you know, how hard is it to start smoothly and to end smoothly? It's almost like we're being conditioned to feel miserable and feel awful all the time. So it's really pretty sad. I was feeling that. This is after going through this horrible experience with this computerized system that didn't work, that was inefficient. This was after, the anxiety of fearing being searched or interrogated upon getting into the country once more. And having a two-hour ride on Long Island Railroad to look forward to also added to anxiety. Well, it gets worse. It gets much worse, in fact. Because by the time I got to Jamaica Station, which is where I decided to take off from, I took for the first time in my life, I took a Z train. That's part of the what's known as skip stop service. That's something else. Skip stop service. I can't figure this out. It's basically where you have two trains, and they alternate stations. Great idea. I guess, you know, when you think about it, you might get there twice as fast. Although actually, when you think about it even more, you probably wait twice as long for the train you need. But the real inefficient part of it is that the trains, while they may not open the door at the station, they stop at the station. So the Z train stopped at every J station that it wasn't going to open its door at, and then it just kept going, but it stopped. So what's the point of having skip stop if it's actually stopping at the skip stations? I don't know. I won't even try to get into that one. But by the time I reached Jamaica, I realized, hey, I have 5 minutes to get my train. Okay, I don't have any money. You know, because I basically had spent all my money. All I had were euros. Lots of euros, but, you know, euros are no good here. So I had to use a credit card to get my ticket. In fact, I had already used a credit card at the train station to get a subway pass. And those machines I like. The subway machines I do like. They're nice and solid, and they tend to work efficiently. But the LIRR machines, oh, I hate those. I hate those with a passion. I always have. Because they just are so obnoxious for no particular reason at all. You know, they say things like, well, we don't give more than $11.25 in change for no particular reason. That's just the figure that they decide to give you. And, you know, if your ticket is like $3 or $5 and all you have is a $20 bill, you get kind of screwed because you don't get all the change that you're due. And also, if you can't buy the ticket on the machine, you get charged extra if you have to buy it on the train, which is not fair at all. I mean, having a $20 bill apparently isn't considered legal tender. So you have to play by its rules. And then when you get change, they come in those stupid dollar coins, which are almost indistinguishable from quarters. But Regardless, at least they take credit cards. At least they take credit cards. So that was my hope of getting a ticket to actually without having any cash on me. So with 5 minutes to go before my train came, I decided to run up to this machine, enter the station I was going to, and then it asked, what type of ticket do you want? What type of ticket do you want? Okay, well, I knew it was peak hour because it was rush hour. So I looked for the button that said peak, and there was one peak one-way city zone. So I said, okay, I'm in the city. I'm going one way. I hit the button. Well, it turns out when you do that, basically you're telling the machine, forget everything I told you up until now, but just get me a peak ticket to New York City from wherever I happen to be standing right now. I didn't know. I'm stupid. I didn't know that Jamaica wasn't considered part of the city. It's not. It's, I guess, part of the suburbs or something. So, basically, after I hit that button, it opens up its little mouth, you know, where you're supposed to put the coins in. It doesn't do anything else. You know, it says follow the instructions for credit card transactions, but there are no instructions. All it does is open up the little coin thing and make this little noise like it's expecting money. And I'm standing there like an idiot with my credit card, so I decide to just give it the credit card and see what happens, even though it didn't ask for the credit card. I give it the credit card, and it just sits there for 4 minutes. I timed it, 4 minutes. My train is pulling in, and this thing is just sitting there saying it's checking with the bank. I don't know what is checking with the bank, but it checks for a very long time. And finally, it approves the transaction and prints the ticket. That's when I realized the mistake on the ticket, that it's actually giving me a ticket to Penn Station from Jamaica, which is pretty useless. So I went up to the clerk at that point and said, hey, this is wrong. I got the wrong ticket. Now, she knew immediately what had happened. She said, yeah, you can't hit that button. You have to hit the other button. She knew it so well because it must happen so many times in a day that she knows exactly what to say. She has a script right there because so many people make the same exact mistake because it's exactly what you would do if you wanted to buy a peak ticket. You would hit that button because it just stood out there. You know, I've used train machines in foreign countries where I don't understand a single word of the language, and it made more sense. It was easier to use because it was more intuitive. This was something that you have to search all the way at the bottom and find the right button to hit, and that's the way you're supposed to do it. So anyway, I said, okay, well, can I just, you know, get a credit for this or a refund or whatever, and or can I buy a ticket from you? And she said, well, I don't take credit cards. Great. You know, the machine takes credit cards. The human does not take credit cards. My train is, like, in the station right now, and this person says the only way you can get a refund is if you fill out a form right now. And I asked her, well, can't I fill out the form and mail it in? No, if you do that, you won't get a refund. All of a sudden, I'm in Eastern Europe mentality here, where I have to do exactly what she says, or I'm not going to get anything, and I'm going to lose my, whatever, $3 that I just spent by credit cards. So I had to fill out this form, which cost me my train, because it was already leaving by that point. And then I had to go back and try to use the machine all over again. And this time I used the other machine. And I put the credit card in. And it asked for my PIN code. Credit cards don't have PIN codes. Debit cards have PIN codes, but credit cards don't have PIN codes. Besides, I just used this credit card at the other machine and didn't ask for a PIN code. So after some more cursing and kicking the machine, I was really turning into a complete lunatic by now. And I know now why people are like this, why people are constantly yelling and screaming and kicking things. Because they've been to Europe, because they know what it's like in other parts of the world. You know, those are the people who have traveled. So I went to the other machine, and of course it couldn't read my card then. It said, no, sorry, I can't read your card. So I knew how that worked. I put it in a second time. Nope, sorry, I can't read your card. Put it in a third time. Thank you, we can read your card. And finally, after another four-minute wait, it spat out a ticket. By that time, I had to wait another half hour for the next train, but at least I got on it. But it's still not a happy ending, because the train I got on was it stunk. It was the sticky floors again, overcrowded. I was spoiled. I was spoiled by being overseas. Overseas, I was able to, no matter where I was, if I was on a subway train, if I was on a long-distance international train, whatever, I was always able to set up my laptop on the seat in front of me. There's a little table that comes down, sort of like on an airplane, I guess. And basically what I would do is set up my laptop there and either type away, write something, or listen to something, because I had all kinds of audio files. In fact, I listened to a lot of WBAI shows while I was traveling. Of course, on the Long Island Railroad, you can't do that. There's not a table. There's not enough space to stretch out at all. And it's so loud and noisy that you couldn't hear anything anyway or concentrate in any way. So by the time I got home, I was just... I had lost it. I had lost all the inspiration that I had come back with because it was just such an unpleasant and frustrating experience getting back. But I've tried to maintain as much as possible. That's it's not easy though. But while I was over there, I have to admit the reason, one of the main reasons I went over there was pure superstition. Yeah, that's right, superstition. Because if you recall, last year I was over there. Last year I went over to Holland and to Germany for the Chaos Congress. And that's when things started to get a little wacky over here at the radio station, where people started taking over and people started getting thrown off the air and all kinds of nasty things started to happen. And I figured, well, maybe all I have to do is go back and things will reverse themselves. Things will go back to the way they were. Or maybe not back to the way they were, because they weren't so great then either, but, you know, just advance to a better stage. And I realized, after I went over there and heard some of the things that were happening back here, that probably the best thing to do is just not to go away anymore, because things seem to just get bad every time I go away. Things have gotten better, I got to say. Things have improved. We have a settlement in the lawsuit that we've been following for the last year against the Pacifica Foundation. There's a new Pacifica National Board, an interim Pacifica National Board, which seems to have more reasonable people on it than before. And that's got to be a good thing. We have a Pacifica National Board meeting here in New York City, which will be taking place this weekend. And that's a great opportunity for people to express themselves one way or another. We just found out where it's going to be. It'll be at the Doubletree Hotel, 1568 Broadway at 47th Street. And that's January 11th through 13th. The schedule basically shows us that Friday through Sunday, the interim board meeting will take place. And the evening meeting takes place on Friday. That starts at 7 p.m., runs till 9:30. On Saturday, meetings all day from 9 to 5, and on Sunday from 9:30 to 3 p.m. So that's the first meeting of the Interim Pacifica National Board. Now, what's interim about this? Interim meaning that it's a kind of a temporary thing. But basically, part of the settlement was a reallocation of the various board seats. And what that means is that right now there's the people who were protesting things last year and trying to change the way the board was moving, and actually people who are behind the lawsuits, they are now in the majority of the Pacifica National Board. So things are changing, at least on paper, but I'm not sure how much they're actually changing in practice. And that's part of the frustrating thing that I heard when I was on trains over there. Over there, listening to various programs, various shows, some of my favorites like Mike Fader, Bob Fass, Morris Orthodox Radio Crusade, and of course Off the Hook, because we had to see just how it sounded over the air. It sounds completely different over the air sometimes than when you're on the phone. And you realize, listening to this, that there's some really good radio going on these airwaves. I mean, it's really fascinating to listen to when people just kind of ramble on. Maybe not in this particular case, but in other cases where people ramble on for long periods of time about their lives, about what's going on, you just sort of get drawn into it. And particularly shows like Bob Fass and Mike Fader, where they just basically go on for hours and you follow them for years. It's the best kind of radio there is. It's like the old Gene Shepherd shows. That if you haven't listened to them, go search them out. You know, they're what radio is all about. You know, most people think radio is just about playing music and sounding cool. It's crawling into your consciousness. It's figuring out where you stand on things. It's figuring out where what you believe in and what you don't believe in, and how to interact with other people, things like that. And I listened. I listened to a lot of radio because we now have the ability to basically grab any show that is taped on this radio station. And everything is recorded in one way or another and posted on a website someplace because there's a lot of interest. Overseas, everybody asked me about this radio station because it now is no longer confined to the United States or even to New York. It's all over the place. People in Norway, people in Germany, people in Holland, they all wanted to know the latest. They all are following. They're listening to other shows. They're listening to other people. They follow what goes on these airwaves. It means a lot to them. So listening to radio programs over there, I was pretty much a part of things. You know, I didn't feel like I was in any way separated. And it brought me into contact with what was going on as far as the settlement and as far as what the latest developments were. And when I was over there, it felt like there was some hope. It still does feel like there's some hope that things are going to work out, that we'll have some peace, that finally people can start to broadcast decent radio again and get on with what it was they were doing. Because we have so many good people, both who are here and who are not here, at least not on the air. And it's time that we really get past all of this. It really is time we got past all of this because it's just been going on for so long and it's been so detrimental to everybody. Unfortunately, it seems like we're not quite out of the woods yet because both of those people I mentioned before, Mike Vader, Bob Fast, longtime people here at the radio station, have been kicked off the air because they were talking about things like what I'm talking about tonight. And I couldn't believe it. I listened to the radio shows. I was in the train listening. I was fascinated by it. The people who I was with were fascinated by it. People were talking about these shows. They listened to them on their own. And they were interested because it was good radio. It was interesting. It was informative. And it was enough to get them kicked off the air. I mean, when speaking your mind is enough to get you kicked off the air, you have to wonder. It's the same mentality. Basically, you know, when I complain about trains and things, a lot of people say, why don't you just go somewhere else, you know? Why don't you just move to another country? It's basically the defense that if you can't say anything good, don't say anything at all. You know, don't criticize. Why not criticize? Why not point out the things that you think are wrong in order to make them better? You know, in the States, we have this mentality that if you criticize something, that means you're against it. If you criticize the war, then you're anti-American. It's nonsense, and it simply shows how weak a platform these people stand on. When any kind of criticism is enough to make them, you know, go off like that and say, well, then you must leave. You can't be part of this because you don't believe in the same things we believe in. That's the kind of thing I'm seeing here, where people get thrown off the air for simply voicing their opinions in a fairly rational way. I mean, there have been lines that have been crossed. There have been some people that have said things they probably shouldn't have said, but it seems to only go in one direction. You can criticize certain people, and you get away with it. But if you criticize other people, you don't get away with it. It's nonsense. And it has to stop. And Hopefully, the rest of us, the ones remaining here, however many that may be, will continue to keep eyes open and continue to report to people what's going on and what's right, what's not right, that kind of thing. This is something I learned from back when I got prosecuted as a hacker back in the 80s. I don't blame people for the way they react under immense pressure. When things started to happen to me, I noticed something. It was rather interesting, in fact. I noticed that there were certain people that would actually go to the authorities on their own without being asked and volunteer information about me. You know, they would say, well, this person said something, anti-government at one point, and maybe this is something that you would be interested in. Maybe it's nothing. Who knows? Basically, the people that do that are scared. There's no question that, they're frightened. And frightened enough to actually volunteer to give information about somebody. You know, it's kind of pathetic, but I don't blame them. Because you don't know how you're going to react under pressure until you feel the pressure. So a lot of people feeling the pressure here, and there has been a substantial pressure over the last year or so here, have reacted in ways that I don't consider to be completely honorable or admirable in any way. But by the same token, I don't blame them, because everybody reacts in a different way. And one thing I most certainly will not tolerate or stand up for or turn a blind eye against is when things change. And things will change. Things always change. There'll be one side in charge, one side won't be in charge. If all this changes and the people that were fighting are now the ones that are in control, if there's retribution, if there's basically a new list of people that will get banned from the airwaves, that is not something that I think anybody would support. And I sure hope that the people that are fighting right now aren't composing a list like that. There's room on this radio station for everybody, and there's so many things to be said. And I just think that it's time we got past it. All right. Hopefully that's all I can say on the subject for now. Again, the Pacifica National Board meeting is taking place this weekend, the interim Pacifica National Board meeting. It's getting very interesting, because the board is pretty much split with a slim majority for the people that have been fighting the old board. So there are changes coming, and hopefully there'll be good changes. The National Board meeting takes place January 11th through 13th, Doubletree Hotel, 1568 Broadway, 47th Street. Friday evening, Saturday all day, and Sunday morning till early afternoon. Well, we're going to take some phone calls in just a little bit. And, Sarah, if you're here, almost didn't make it this week, huh?
Well, you know, I had a little trouble downstairs.
What happened?
I wasn't on the list, you know.
Oh, the list, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I had to, you know, get tackled and go through all that.
Yeah. The old searching and everything else. Yeah, okay, well, the people downstairs are friendly, at least. It's not like that one instance I had. They're much better people now, and very nice. So, did you see the, actually, I haven't brought these out yet, but I brought these back from Europe. Euros. That's right. Euro notes. This is what they sound like. Nice and crispy. A 5 euro note, a 10 euro note, a 20 euro note, a 50 euro note, and a 100. I'll pass these around for people to fondle. And they have all kinds of anti-counterfeiting measures inside them, which I think are pretty interesting. Euro banknotes are printed on pure cotton paper that contains fluorescent fibers, with some sections of the face printed in relief, making them identifiable to the touch and acting as safeguards against forgery. That's according to the European Central Bank. Those are euro coins you're hearing now. It's actually, the whole thing is very symmetrical. I didn't realize this when I was talking about it last week. But basically, you have a one-penny coin, you have a two-penny coin, a five-penny coin, and a 10-penny, and a 20, and a 50, and then you have the 1-euro coin, and then the 2-euro coin. Sounds very complicated, but it's actually really, really simple, because the whole thing is a 1-2-5 system. So it's one-penny, two-penny, five-penny, then it's 10 cent, 20 cent, 50 cent, that's 1 euro, 2 euro, 5 euro, then it's 10 euro, 20 euro, 50 euro, and then it's 100, 200, 500, which is where it ends. Every one of the bills increases in size, too, with its value, which I think is also pretty interesting. The 5 euro note, which is the first note that you actually get, is the smallest, and the 500, which I wasn't able to get, is the biggest. And my 100 seems to be missing. Oh, there it is. Okay. Careful with that. Keep track of these things. So, further ways of detecting whether a euro note is a forgery include checking the watermark and security thread running through the note. The watermark displays a picture and the number indicating the value, which are visible if held to the light. The security thread is a dark line running through the note that can also be seen when held up to light. Other telltale signs are discernible if the banknote is tilted. These signs vary between low and high denomination notes. Low denomination notes of 5 euro, which is equal to about $4.40. 10 and 20 euro have a hologram foil stripe on which can be recognized the euro symbol and the value of the note. These denominations also have an iridescent stripe on the reverse side, which shines when the note is tilted under a bright light. Higher denominations, 50, 100, 200, and 500 notes, have hologram foil patches showing an image of the motif and the value of the banknote when the note is tilted. The notes also have a color-shifting ink feature. When the note is tilted, the numerals change color from purple to olive green or brown. The new coins are also made to specifications that make it easy to detect false coins. They don't go into any detail about that. Here's another technological advance. Dollar Rent-A-Car is continuing a test program of fingerprinting customers through the end of January and adding New Orleans, Newark, and John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York to the test sites. Yeah, fingerprinting for renting a car. The aim is to thwart theft. Jim Senese, Vice President of Quality Assurance, said 99.75% of customers involved last month either said they approved or did not complain. 99.75, that's a strange number, don't you think? I mean, is that a number that you just sort of pull out of your head, you know? Usually, you know, if you're going to exaggerate, you say 99.99%, but this guy said 99.75%, which tells you that either he's quoting a very specific figure or he exaggerates in weird ways. I guess you could probably figure out how many people were asked if it really is a poll of some sort, because it's, you know, 0.75. That would be that would tell me that 400 people were polled, right?
Yeah, there you go, 400. Yeah.
So 400 people were asked.
There's something quite curious on this 100 note here. I haven't looked at the other ones, but I haven't seen this on any currency before. It says that it's copyright the European Central Bank.
The note is copywritten.
It's copywritten. It's got the little circle C on it. It says circle C, and then it has a bunch of different abbreviations, one of which is ECB, and I assume the others are ECB in different languages. But you'd think that the power of the bank would be enough to deter counterfeiting without having to put a copyright symbol on it.
Yeah, you'd think that. I mean, if you basically are using that, well, maybe you're not allowed to use euro notes in advertisements without getting permission. Maybe
that's,
I don't know. Maybe we're not even allowed to talk about euros without getting permission.
I think we better stop right now.
Maybe we should stop, yeah. But speaking of copy protection, we have an ally. We have some guy who's on our side, it seems, who has a clue. You know who that is?
Who's that?
It's Representative Rick Boucher of Virginia. That's right. He basically seems to get it. I mean, I've heard of him before, and I've seen the things he's written before. He had a very good statement about Dmitry Skolarov back in August of this year, where he said, "It is unfortunate that the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of California has exercised his discretion to obtain an indictment in this matter. It is clear that the software, which is the subject of the indictment, has many applications in furtherance of the exercise of fair use rights by purchasers of electronic books, including the ability to excerpt electronically small portions of the text for the purposes of quotation and research. This unfortunate legal action highlights the overly broad terms of the criminal provisions of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It clearly demonstrates the intrusion of these provisions on the ability of American citizens to exercise their legally protected fair use rights, and it spotlights the need for legislation refining the criminal provisions with the goal of making lawful all conduct in furtherance of the exercise of fair use rights." This guy gets it. He understands why it's an evil piece of legislation. I don't know if he voted for it. But to update you on what he's doing lately, record companies' efforts, this story comes from CNET, record companies' efforts to protect CDs against digital copying are beginning to draw scrutiny from lawmakers concerned that the plans might violate the law. On Friday, Representative Rick Boucher sent a letter to executives of the Recording Industries Trade Association asking whether anti-piracy technology on CDs might override consumers' abilities to copy albums they have purchased for personal use. A 1992 law allows music listeners to make some personal digital copies of their music. In return, recording companies collect royalties on the blank media used for this purpose. For every digital audio tape, blank audio CD, or mini disc sold, a few cents go to record labels. McBoucher says, I'm particularly concerned that some of these technologies may prevent or inhibit consumer home recording using recorders, or inhibit consumer home recording using, oh, that doesn't really make much sense, recorders and media covered by the Audio Home Recording Act. Any deliberate change to a CD by a content owner that makes the allowed personal copies no longer possible would appear to violate the content owner's obligations. So basically what the record companies are trying to do is both get paid for the digital media, the blank digital media, and prevent people from making copies onto that blank digital media, you know, and scream copyright infringement and all that kind of thing. So I guess it finally drew some attention that they're trying to have it both ways, and that's just not quite right.
I think that Boucher, with sentences like that, could just reduce his information to a simple 30-character acronym.
Uh-huh. Would be nice. Would be nice. We have this from Japan. Actually, somebody sent us a police blotter of some sort from Japan, but there was one interesting note on it. There's all kinds of crimes on here, including gun charges, fraud, murder, jewel heist, but this one is called copyright piracy. Dated November 28, 2001, the high-tech crimes unit of the Kyoto police today arrested two young men on suspicion of violating the copyright law by sharing copyrighted files between their computers via P2P, peer-to-peer, file exchange software. The arrests were said to be the first of their kind in Japan. The initial complaint was filed by America's Adobe Systems. Yeah, Adobe is really busy out there. And what else? Crowd surveillance kit using face recognition technology by Visionics has been a comic failure in tests by the Tampa, Florida police, according to the ACLU. By leveraging the Florida Open Records Law, the watchdog organization obtained system logs, proving that the Visionics contraption has thus far failed to identify one single crook or pervert listed in the department's photographic database, while falsely identifying a large number of innocent citizens. The earliest logs provided by the department show activity for July 12th, 13th, 14th, and 20th. On those dates, the system operators logged 14 instances in which the system indicated a possible match. Of the 14 matches on those 4 days, all were false alarms, according to the ACLU. The Tampa police started using this system in June of this year and abandoned it in August. Actually, I guess that's June of last year. Yeah. I wasn't aware they had abandoned it, though. The Register, which is where this article comes from, was the first publication to report back in September that face recognition technology is essentially useless in crowd surveillance situations. We're glad to see the ACLU following our lead here. Unfortunately, a number of U.S. airports were investing in the Visionics technology and a similar scam kit from Visage for window dressing to reassure frightened passengers that terrorists can be caught by automated cameras. Anyone tempted to imagine that the airline industry, the FAA, and the DOT are in any way concerned about passenger safety should read an article in the New York Times which revealed that the U.S. Department of Transportation, quote, will not insist that airport screeners be high school graduates, a requirement that would have disqualified a quarter of the present workforce of 28,000, unquote. Amazing. That's pretty much it from the newsroom, I guess. You have anything else over there? Take some phone calls otherwise.
Well, on the topic of the DOT, this could become more involved than we might like, but there's a report that was just released called Vulnerability Assessment of the Transportation Infrastructure Relying on the Global Positioning System.
Oh, boy.
And, of course, GPS is a system of satellites that allow you to triangulate your position on the Earth from a little handheld device or similar small piece of electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand quite why this is such a revelation, but they say that it is vulnerable to jamming and impersonation, and that planes should not rely entirely on GPS for their navigation. Go figure.
Yeah, okay, all right.
And, you know, the great deficiency here is, I say it over and over again, but cryptography, or lack thereof. And we've seen it happen with the DCSS case where CSS was an inferior system that was easily cracked. And the reason it was inferior in the first place was because they don't want to put strong cryptography in the hands of the masses. And here we go again with a GPS system where you could impersonate one or more of these satellites and tell a plane that it's somewhere other than where it is or get somebody lost in the woods strictly because they did not invest in good cryptography so that when your little device is talking to one of those satellites, you really know that it's one of those satellites.
Disturbing, to say the least. Well, phone number is 212-209-2900, and I can see the phones are all wacky again today. I see calls moving all over the place. Well, I'd like to know from people who are calling in, and obviously winding up someplace where we can't get to them, is what happens when you ring the phone for a very long time? Does it pick up? Does it just give you a fast busy or something strange is going on? Because I see the lines just kind of advancing in all different places. But give us a call if you have something to contribute or to say. And I guess let's take our first phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, don't you just hate when people...
All right, look, I gotta really insist that you stop calling us. Otherwise, we'll have to stop taking phone calls completely. And we had a conversation at the meeting, Rebel. All right? I made it clear to you what would happen to you if you continued doing this. I wasn't kidding. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Hi, Emmanuel. How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
First-time caller from Kentucky, but a very long-time listener.
Great.
Real quick question for you guys, actually for you specifically. I just got a voice string phone, and I'm planning on taking it over to Portugal. And I was wondering how that worked for you guys whenever you went over and you used your phone.
It works great, but you have to have what's known as a either dual mode a dual band or a tri-band phone. Because the frequencies over there are different. We use 1900 and they use 900 and 1800 in order to place their phone calls. So while your SIM card will work, your phone won't unless it's able to receive those frequencies.
Well, I have a tri-band phone. I know that recently I called VoiceStream, and I remember you saying a little while back that VoiceStream allowed you to receive calls for free. Is that correct?
Well, I don't think it's something that they mean to do. I haven't seen the current bill, but I do know that I went there last December, and I went there over the summer, and both times I was not charged for basically the incoming calls. I think were put against my my total minutes for the month. So I wasn't charged for those. Basically, they just counted as minutes, and they were free.
Okay. I had asked him about that. One other quick note about that, and then I'll get off the air. I noticed something real weird, at least on a VoiceStream phone. If you dial 115, you end up getting a radio station in the Midwest. An NPR station in the Midwest patches you directly in.
Really?
And you can listen to the radio station.
Wow. I wonder how much that costs, though.
I'm not sure.
Try this. This is something interesting that we just discovered this weekend. Try dialing 4 threes followed by the pound sign on a VoiceStream phone, and you get all kinds of wacky things.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure what it means. And it might not even work in Kentucky, but it works in New York. 4 threes followed by a pound sign. So
I'll give that a try.
All right.
Thanks, Emmanuel.
Sorry. Take care. Weird. All right. Let's take another phone call. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air. Good evening. You're on the air. All right, it's not a dial tone, but it's a hum of another sort. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, or good evening, Manuel.
How you doing? Make it quick, though.
I'm going to hope that you get suspended so you can join the illustrious group of people who are suspended.
Well,
because you have done enough to, you know, to say how you felt that is similar to the way I feel. And in support of all the banned and fired.
Well, let me just counter that, though, by saying that I'm not saying what I'm saying in order to join a group of people that have been suspended or to be part of one side or another. Frankly, I think there's a lot of nonsense on both sides. I just think the time has come where we have to stop harboring all these old grudges. We have to forgive, and there should be a lot of forgiveness going on both sides. And we have to start thinking about radio again. We have to start thinking about all the good radio that we can produce out of this place. I mean, you know, some really, really, really good people are at this radio station, and a lot of them are unfortunately not at this radio station at the moment, although they're still out there someplace. And when they're all together, when we're all producing programs together, you know, it's amazing. It's magic. It's something that I think is precious. I mean, you don't throw people like that away. You don't just walk away from them and cast them aside. You know, you have to treasure these people and encourage them. And, yeah, occasionally they might say something you don't like. You might disagree with them. It happens all the time. That's part of what speech is, something that we in America seem to not understand increasingly. When someone says something you don't like, you just either cover up your ears and refuse to listen, or you kick them out one way or another, or you accuse them of all kinds of things that they were never part of in the first place. And that's what's going on here, and that's what's got to stop. So that's my only motivation is not to join any particular group of people. But thanks for your call, and thanks for all the thoughts that you've continued to bring us. Does matter. Does make a difference. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
I wanted to make a comment on you. You know, you were talking about the Long Island Railroad system.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I think that your point is very well taken, not only in the subway station, but they went from a system that worked fairly well, that the like you said, the touchtone system,
mm-hmm.
the teletrip, whatever they used to call it.
Yeah.
This voice system is total nonsense. I spent about 20 minutes one day trying to get a schedule. Then I finally picked up a phone book and looked it up. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, and they make it so difficult. And, you know, over on the other, in those other countries I was in, every single country, they're all the same. They all speak different languages, but they all have the same basic system. You go to a particular chart in every train station, and you look up what train you want to take, what day you want to do it, and it tells you everything, including what time it arrives at the faraway destination, and it tells you what track the train will be on. Have you ever been in Penn Station where they tell you what track your train is going to be on? They usually tell you a minute before it shows up. Like, they
right, even that's a joke. You have to run all over the place to find your track.
Yeah, they have no idea when it's going to show up. Over in Amsterdam, I was at Central Station in Amsterdam, they can park three trains per platform. They have a middle track, and basically the trains sort of like cut around each other and just go on to the A section of the track or the B section of the track. And it's so synchronized. It's so intelligent. It's so amazing. It's like a you know, an intelligent being of its own, the train system.
I mean, not to mention the way they operate. You know, they pull into the station in such a way that you're almost forced to the worst possible part of the platform. first of all, the train itself will go all the way to the far, far end of the as far as it can go.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, the things you want are at the totally opposite end. Then if you get an off-hour train, they'll cut off the last four cars. They'll say, well, no, these cars don't exist. They just... Shut them off completely.
Or they'll tell you the first two cars will platform, but you have no idea what car you're in, so it
right,
doesn't
exactly.
really matter at all.
It's a very, very unfriendly system. I mean, and the jolting part, you know, if you think that's bad, by the way, try taking a bus one day. It's like the drivers are getting off on just bouncing you around as much as they possibly can.
Let me ask you a question. Why do you think it's so bad here? I mean, I know we're not stupid. We can do better, but why don't we?
I really think it's something like a little bit of... It's kind of like an American attitude that if you're riding mass transit at all, you deserve what you get. You belong in a car in this country. If you're not in a car, if you're not in a limo,
mm-hmm.
then you sort of deserve what you get. If you're in a mass transit situation of any sort, whether it's Long Island Railroad, subways, buses, these are bus people. Who cares, really? That's, I think, the attitude.
Maybe so. I just think we need to invest a whole lot in the infrastructure and make it work efficiently, because the rest of the world is doing good, you know. I've been in Europe. That's the future, and we're going to be the past really soon if we don't start making improvements.
That's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah.
But thank you, Emmanuel.
All right, thanks for calling.
Okay.
A lot of people would accuse me of being anti-American and, saying horrible things, but you have to speak up when you see something's wrong. You know, and it's obviously wrong. It's not the way it should be. It's uncomfortable and inefficient and lousy. All right, let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Emmanuel. I just wanted to follow up on that. The guy just said...
Okay, you got some static, and also I think your phone is... your radio is on.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, but I still hear the static.
Sorry.
You can make it fast.
Yes, I'm sorry. I just want to follow up. You know, we used to have a system of transit in this country... as incomplete as it was, that was just second to none in a lot of ways. We had trolley systems, we had light rail, we had all kinds of things that were gutted in the 30s, 40s, and 50s as the automobile came in. And it's just, you know, sad to see, but, you know, Long Island Railroad and what used to be the New York Penn Central Railroad were, you know, second to none. And it's just sad to see them go, but it's a lack of investment in our public transportation system.
Right, and what happened in Detroit is a excellent example of how a city was gutted because of the auto industry and how the mass transit was literally ripped up, you know, for the benefit of the car, and now nobody lives there, and it's a ghost town.
Gotcha.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
I hope you get that static fixed. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Yes, hi.
How you doing?
Do you know the rationale, can you assume you know the rationale behind Amy's being forbidden on this morning? He said, the guy, whatever his name is, Clayton something, said that a slip of paper was slipped under the door, and he said it wasn't sufficiently official.
I'm not sure. I'd rather keep personalities out of it, but I do know that it's raised a lot of concern. You're speaking about democracy now,
yes,
being returned to our airwaves.
Right.
It's been returned to the airwaves of the other Pacifica stations, so I'm not sure why it's not on this station.
Well, I think this man is taking over and presuming to override
That's an opinion. I think that's something that should be brought up at the National Board meeting this weekend.
Why did we have to wait so long? The other thing is, did you notice that when you were in Europe, did you notice anything about the public schools at all?
No, actually, I didn't.
I don't know if they practice what this country is beginning to practice more and more, a lot of religiosity being brought into the curriculum. Are you familiar with that at all?
No, I'm not.
Because I think that's one of the reasons we don't compare with them is in science and math and things like that, because we have all these beliefs, mysterious beliefs that they impose on us.
Hmm.
Are you aware of it at all?
No, no.
Okay, I'll be in touch. Bye-bye.
Okay. Look forward to it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Don't you just hate when...
Oh, please.
Yeah, I do hit it.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, first time I've called your show. Really agree with all your remarks, and I'm just so steamed at how the oil industry runs this country, and that's what's behind the mass transit being so lousy.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to just promote people to boycott oil and demand that we do solar and renewable energy in a big way. There's no excuse. We can get 200 watts of electricity from a square meter of PV panel. It's the same stuff that computer chips are made out of. And they're just totally foot-dragging on that. The media just never mentions solar and renewable energy. Right now, it's cheaper to put a wind plant up than to generate the same amount of electricity from coal, a 1.5-megawatt wind plant. They're just dragging their feet. Europe is light years ahead of us on renewable energy. And that's why there's a decent mass transit, I think. Or at least why it's so bad here, because the oil companies just and the energy monopolies just run everything.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. And in fact, when you're in Europe, you see windmills everywhere, and they're all in use.
I understand Denmark is something like 30% wind power.
It's great
electricity.
I mean, you don't think a power plant would look attractive, but these look beautiful. You know.
Well, you know, there's some a very narrow moneyed wing of the environmental movement has actually complained that wind towers are unsightly and that birds hit them, but they don't have any problem with cooling towers for nukes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And as far as the BAI situation is right on, I mean, I sometimes wonder whether they're deliberately shooting themselves in the foot in order to destroy the whole network or whether it is just personality conflicts. And I'm sure there's some people up there just laughing all the way to the bank.
I like to think it's mostly the latter. I like to think that we're coming out of the woods and that we can put all this aside and just work together in the future.
I think it's an outrage that with the settlement just happening, they went and fired Bob Fass and Mike Fader. What an outrage.
Well, let's just hope that's it's only a temporary thing. We're out of time, unfortunately. I'd love to speak about this more, but we do have to go. We'll be back again next week. And again, the Pacifica National Board meeting takes place this weekend. Hang on, let me find the exact time again. At the DoubleTree Hotel, 1568 Broadway, 47th Street. You can check www.wbai.net for more information or the Pacifica website, www.pacifica.org. We'll see you next week. Good night.
You're tuned to WBAI in New York, listener-sponsored radio. The preceding program, Off the Hook with Emmanuel Goldstein, was brought to you live with portions on recording. Our next scheduled program will be Tahir with Barbara Nimri Aziz. And an important point, at 10 p.m., Nuff Said will be on the graphic arts program, and Jules Pfeiffer will be a special live guest. Please stay tuned. Again, you're tuned to WBAI in New York. WBAI in New York, and in just a moment now, Tahir with Barbara Nimri Aziz.